here on HPR's conversation last month, we were the first to report that American Samoa was the only U.S. territory to remain free of COVID-19 cases. FEMA Region 9 Administrator Bob Fenton had been talking about the lessons learned from the pandemic of 1918, which was then called the Spanish flu. We learned of the history of two Samoas thanks to the Retro Report, a nonprofit that produces documentaries. Take a listen to the story of the two Samoas, American Samoa and Western Samoa.
American Samoa, one of the loveliest spots in all the Pacific, a place of rare beauty, of constantly changing scenery.
Think fast. What are some things you know about American Samoa? Maybe that its Democratic caucus was, for some reason, the only contest won by Mike Bloomberg. Or maybe you know it as the site of the fictional alma mater of shady Breaking Bad lawyer Saul Goodman. Or maybe because people with Samoan parents are an estimated 56 times more likely to play in the NFL than other Americans, Junior Seau or Troy Polamalu come to mind. But today, there are other reasons people are talking about American Samoa. As American preparedness has come under scrutiny during the coronavirus.
What was inadequate about the initial response?
Advanced planning. Many of the things that we're doing right now all could have been done in advance because we've known an epidemic is coming.
The strange saga of a few tiny islands that came under American control nearly 5,000 miles from the mainland has some lessons to teach us. All we need to do is go back about 100 years.
America is called to arms.
As World War I was winding down across the globe, deep in the Pacific, the fate of the Samoan people would now be separated by the actions of two different imperialists. New Zealand controlled the islands to the west, America ran the territory to the east. Enter the 1918 flu. The 1918 pandemic was a monster, killing an estimated 50 million people worldwide. And nowhere would the disease be felt more acutely than New Zealand's newly occupied Western Samoa. In late October 1918, a passenger ship left Auckland with the disease already spreading on board. When it reached Western Samoa, New Zealand officials there allowed the ship to disembark with a clean bill of health. Influenza tore through the native Samoans, and nearly a quarter of the island's inhabitants died. In the public inquiries that followed, the island's administrator, New Zealand Colonel Robert Logan, came under intense scrutiny, particularly his attitude toward the native Samoans. He would later describe them as, quote, like children who should be grateful for what he had done for them. Yikes. But the biggest scandal concerned a telegram he got from the man in charge of neighboring American Samoa, Naval Governor John Martin Poyer. Poyer appeared to offer assistance to Logan, who reportedly ignored it. That's likely because American Samoa had made a critical move, setting up a quarantine against his islands.
Yonder mansion among the palms is the residence of the Naval Commandant Governor of American Samoa, only possession of the United States in the Southern Hemisphere.
And that brings us to American Samoa. If New Zealand's islands suffered the world's worst case of the flu, some 50 miles away, the American territory was one of the miracles of the 1918 pandemic. Under Governor Poyer's swift and strict quarantine, not a single person on the islands contracted a confirmed case of the disease. It helps explain why the territory remained under American control, while Samoans to the west, horrified by New Zealand's leadership during the flu crisis, would later establish independence. So, how exactly did American Samoa pull this off? Well, first it was a tiny colony of 8,000 people run by a naval commander. And along with the unilateral ability to lock down the territory, Governor Poyer also had strong buy-in from residents. Like lots of Pacific Islands at the time, American Samoa had experience with epidemics. Thanks to previous outbreaks of measles and smallpox in the region, they had a pre-designated quarantine facility that could be readied within 2 hours. And on top of that, Samoan communities were also governed by a traditional system of chiefs. Poyer enlisted them to help patrol the shores and make sure not even small boats slipped in over the reefs. American Samoa also sought information and used it. Authorities in Western Samoa had been underinformed about the pandemic, and though American Samoa lacked official communication from the U.S. government, Poyer and his staff sought out press reports and had a plan in place by the time Western Samoa was in trouble. Today, the story of the Samoas is a reminder of the need for all places, no matter how remote, to prepare for a pandemic. During the 1918 outbreak in the continental U.S., the list of so-called escape communities that avoided the onslaught of disease was tiny. a rural town in Colorado, a naval station in San Francisco Bay, a sanatorium for tuberculosis patients in upstate New York. Like American Samoa, they were small and isolated. And here's the thing, at some point, all of them saw at least some cases of the flu, even if it was well after the rest of the world. In American Samoa's case, a new strain of influenza would finally come ashore in 1926. In our increasingly interconnected world, no nation, no community should plan on escaping a global pandemic. Despite being a lot bigger than it was a century ago, with a population of 56,000, American Samoa is once again the only U.S. state or territory without a confirmed case of this pandemic. But that has not impacted the island's sense of urgency. In recent weeks, American Samoa has sent pleading letters to Washington, seeking ventilators, testing kits, and outreach to the territories on how to manage the coronavirus. And the steps they've taken are the same as here: closing schools, banning gatherings, limiting public transit, because in 2020, no place is an island, even when you are literally an island.
That was Retro Report's Tale of Two Samoas. Producer Mike Spoller talked to us from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where he's currently based.
I was actually paying attention to the Super Tuesday results and Mike Bloomberg take American Samoa after spending, you know, $500 million or so. He ended up winning there, and I just was curious about it, just from paying attention to that. And that night, I happened to come across this story about the quarantine that took place there. At that time, there wasn't sort of the coronavirus crisis that we know today, and just got interested in this story of a naval governor there who had managed to successfully quarantine the island. And it just so turned out that a couple weeks later, just about everyone was talking about quarantining.
It's amazing because American Samoa is the only U.S. territory that is COVID-free.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, one of the last things they did was shut down the Hawaiian Airlines flights coming in. And, you know, at that time, I think that was on March 26th, there was some real concern that potentially they had people come in. But so far, it seems as if that's not the case, which is 100 years later, sort of the same story playing out.
Well, we did talk to the head of FEMA Region 9 recently, and he was aware of that, a bit of history, I think. And he also said that, you know, because the island there just went through this terrible measles outbreak, that everybody was just really, you know, on guard.
Yeah, that was a factor for sure. And it's interesting, going back to 1918, they had also had experience with epidemics coming through the region. In fact, not so much outbreaks on American Samoa, but the surrounding islands, they had to sort of guard against it coming into their shores. And so they had a quarantine facility there that they had built and actually had asked to expand. They didn't ultimately get the funding to expand it, but they had a quarantine facility ready by 1918 because they had seen measles and smallpox and other forms of influenza had come through the region. And so it's interesting that in about December last year, they were dealing with this measles outbreak. And so they had been ready, you know. They had been sort of thinking about this kind of stuff prior to COVID-19.
So I guess what struck you when you were doing this research and you saw what they did right and what they did wrong?
When you look at the story of American Samoa, what you see is certainly they had some distinct advantages. They were a small group of islands, about 8,000 people at the time. They were run by a naval commander who was able to act pretty unilaterally. There wasn't a lot of communication with mainland America at that time. In fact, you really had no sort of communication about the influenza coming in. And so there were definitely advantages in terms of the size and in terms of the unilateral authority there. But there were also things that are very applicable today. The naval governor there was informed about the pandemic coming through, whereas in Western Samoa, they had really not taken advantage of some of the resources, or either they weren't available to them about what was happening with the pandemic worldwide. And in American Samoa, they were reading press reports the best they could. They also had a traditional system of chiefs who were able to patrol the island, and they worked with Governor Poyer in order to do that. And that's ultimately something we're seeing here in America, is you need the local buy-in. You need an approach that works both at the top and at the local level, and they had that.
And you mentioned that you had some trouble initially looking up information about Western Samoa, and you had to go look in the New Zealand and Australian newspapers?
That night when I was curious about the Mike Bloomberg win, I wanted to look up the real-time story of what had happened there. And so I went to the Library of Congress and tried to just find any references to the work there, specifically the naval governor, any references to him there. And there was almost nothing on the American side. You know, we take a lot of pride. We don't leave a lot of our successes untold in America. But this was one where, you know, I just couldn't find anything. And there was much more on the Western Samoa side because of what had happened there. It was, you know, a tragic story. And so they had public inquiries. And there were references to, hey, American Samoa didn't have these problems. Why was there this difference?
And so you went and did that research and just found lots of information about it.
Yeah, there were a lot of different, I would say, archives used for this, because whenever you're telling a story in the early 20th century prior to sound on film, you're dealing with a lot of different archives in order to make something visually interesting, and the team at Retro Report is great at sort of finding those materials and figuring out ways to make them work.
And so Retro Report, I mean, it's a way to showcase some really interesting history.
Yeah, so Retro Report started, I would say, almost a decade ago, and the goal of it is to basically contextualize history through the lens of today, to sort of figure out where have we stopped along this path before, because a lot of things today can feel unprecedented, especially in sort of social media age. It seems as if every waking moment is, you know, one of the most unique things that's ever occurred. And there's always a precedent in history. And when you look back at something that, you know, people got through in the past, they overcame or they dealt with it or it was tragic, you can learn lessons from that. And so that was the goal of Retro Report, and it continues to be. So it's been an interesting experiment with Retro Report in order to figure out how do we tell stories across the broad spectrum of news that can continue to inform people through the lens of history.
That was Matt Spoehler, producer of the Retro Report short documentary film entitled A Tale of Two Samoas. Spoehler has also produced a number of other films related to sports history, politics, and music. You can find links to the nonprofit on our website.